So there are some problems with staying half the week in Ankeny and half the week in Iowa City with my family. And one of them is that I submit the sermon title before perhaps the sermon is fully done. And then my sermon walk takes me away from whatever I had intended to speak on. And so we will save why baptism for another time. Instead, talk about things that are known and things that are unknown. And I will endeavor to speak slowly, since one of the great joys and celebrations of moving to Iowa in December, and as Beth would say, the only celebration of moving to Iowa in December, is that I can take advantage of my father's season tickets to the Iowa wrestling team, and Friday night Oklahoma State came to town. So some referees got some encouragement they'd probably not heard in 15 years on Friday night, so my voice is still a little shouted out. But I would like us to take a look at what is going on here. And I say things known and things unknown, and I mean that in a specific way. That we have in the other baptism stories, John does not recognize Jesus immediately. Here in Matthew, this gospel that we've talked about is being written for the Jews, is going a little bit into more depth to talk here again. We want to fulfill all righteousness. We said a few weeks ago that Matthew spends a lot of time talking about prophecy and prophecies fulfilled. And here again we have this, that Jesus is saying, no, 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 you're going to baptize me so that we can fulfill some prophecy and righteousness that I'm not even going to bother footnoting like I usually do. And so that's what we have here in Matthew, this attempt to convince us that Jesus is at the fulfillment of all prophecy. If we take all the baptismal narratives together, though, what we see is that we have John baptizing Jesus, and later on, as we talked about in Advent, we have Jesus going to John and explaining to John's disciples and Jesus' disciples that, yes, yes, John's a great person, the greatest of the humans, but nonetheless, nothing in comparison to the Son of God. So we ask here, what has brought this relationship together? Why is it that Jesus submits himself to John to be baptized? Why does this need to happen? And it could be to fulfill prophecy, but it could be for entirely different reasons. How many of you have ever been in the situation of working for someone when you're convinced you're smarter than they are? Raise it, show your hand, show your hand. How many of you were absolutely certain of this, and perhaps still are, but discovered halfway into your experience that you didn't necessarily know how to do all the things that person did? Anyone? Anyone? Okay. My old professor, Peter Gomes, who taught at Harvard and needed to stroke the egos of Harvard undergraduates, used to say, "You are all far smarter than I am, but I know a great deal more than you do." And so this is something that we have to remember in our lives. It's really hard. It's really hard to remember in our lives that we may have this view of ourselves as someone who's really smart and really good at the thing that we do. And we may be right in that view of ourselves. We may be right that we're very clever and that we're really good at mastering the thing that we're doing. And we may be right that this person across from us is not nearly as smart as we are. But every time I get in that situation, I, in about 5 minutes, discover that I've made some horrible blunder in my assumptions. And that the other person, the person on the other side of the table, knows some crucial fact that I had missed in my own life. And I think probably this is true for all of you who are over the age of 16 in the audience. We know that everyone who's under 16 never has that moment. They're not. Okay, Lexi's paying attention. Okay, so what we have here is a thing we need to remember, that we look at Jesus through the lens of what happens after this moment. Jesus' baptism is, in most ways, and in almost all stories, the beginning of Jesus' revelation to us on earth. John basically starts his gospel at Jesus' baptism. This is the start of everything. And what we sometimes forget is that when we're looking down at Jesus, the Son of Man, when we're looking at Jesus who has spent 40 days in the wilderness wondering who he is, when we look at Jesus who is questioning God on the cross, when we look at Jesus, the resurrected one, we forget about Jesus in the first 30 years of his life, about which we have very few stories. We have a few, one or two, in the temple, etc., etc., but very few things. We know he's a carpenter. This is what we're told. This is what we learn. And at some point when he's 30, he gets a call to do something different. He gets a call to go down to John in the river. He goes down not having been a prophet, not having been a scholar, not having been a teacher. He goes down to John not knowing who he is going to be. He may know who he is. We don't know for sure. But he does not know who he is going to be except in the very plainest prophetic ways. He sees his story far in the future but does not know how to get from A to B. How do we know this? He spends 40 days in the desert trying to figure it out. It's a pretty good sign. It's hot in the desert. It's dry. You get very thirsty and dirty. You don't do that unless you're trying to figure something out. So Jesus' narrative at this point may be, I am very much higher than John. But he looks at John, and John's been doing this for a long time. John's got a bunch of followers out in the desert, down by the river. Crowds are coming to be baptized by him. Something that will happen later on with Jesus. And Jesus goes to John and basically says to him, I'm smarter than you are, but you know a great deal more than I do. And this is the moment here that Jesus, in his humility, recognizes what so many of us fail to recognize in our day-to-day life, that we all have the opportunity to learn from someone else. We all have the opportunity to be transformed by our conversations and our experiences with other people. We all have the opportunity to be a little humble and assume that we may not fully know what's going to happen to us and how our stories play out. And at the same time, it's entirely possible that the person we are talking to is not some stuffy know-it-all, convinced they have the right answer for everything. Because what does John say here? This is the aspect of John's personality that comes out in Matthew, does not come out in the other narratives. John recognizes that Jesus may be greater than he is. And how many of you have looked around and seen someone with the potential to be so much more than you? There are a lot of teachers in here. I'm sure all of you have. I know I have. And so too does John. John's narrative is, I am doing this thing. And it is a great thing, bringing people back to God. But before me is someone who could be greater. Surely, it is not my job to baptize him. But Jesus recognizes that as John has had an ark, so too will Jesus have an ark. And at this point, it is John who must baptize Jesus. And looking on it from afar, it's always confusing. But if you look at it in our own lives, understand that we may have done great things. We may have great things yet to go in front of us. But so is that true of everyone we meet on the road. And so as John and Jesus both submit themselves to be part of the other's story, so do we have the chance to be part of the greater story of everyone's life around us, everyone we encounter, everyone whose life touches ours and we touch. Because the thing that we learn as Christians is that the story does not begin with us, and the story does not end with us. The story starts in the beginning with God and ends in the future with God and God's people. And surely, as we have our parts to play in that story, other people come along to extend it into the future. We have learned from the people before us, and we teach those after us. And at some point, we don't know when, the student becomes the teacher, and the teacher becomes the student. Thanks be to God. Amen.